Hello and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Davis Havi. On this week's recap, Kodiak City voters will once again decide if the city manager will be required to live within city limits or not, after the city council moved forward a ballot proposition to change the manager's residency requirements.
I think this really just shows our desire to hire locally and hopefully fill this position from a more local position, somebody that understands and knows Kodiak.
More about that story later, but first,
support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at KodiakHealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
The Alaska Weather Vane scallop fishery opened on July 1st. The waters around Kodiak are home to nearly half the state's total harvest, but there wasn't exactly a rush of boats leaving the harbor to fish for them. Weather Vane scallops are the largest species of scallop in the world and the only scallop species on the West Coast that has a substantial commercial fishery. And this year, fishermen can harvest nearly 400,000 shucked pounds in the state and nearly 200,000 around Kodiak. That's according to an Alaska Department of Fish and Game notice published last month. Allocations for weather vane scallops are the same as they were last year. That harvest level is fairly small compared to the millions of pounds fishermen can catch of other species like halibut and salmon. And the poundage isn't the only part of the fishery that is smaller than the rest. Nat Nichols is an area biologist with the Department of Fish and Game.
I would put scallops in the end of the spectrum that is really kind of off people's radar. There's two vessels that fish scallops in the state of Alaska.
Both of these vessels are homeported in Kodiak. Weather vane scallops only live in the waters of Alaska, so they're also the only two boats that fish for them in the world. So why is that? Nichols says it has to do with permitting. The weather vane scallop fishery is co-managed by the federal government and the state, meaning that participating boats need different permits. And Nichols says scallop fishing gear is very specialized, so to be profitable, fishermen need to fish both federal and state waters.
So this is a dredge gear fishery. There's not a lot of boats on them that have 15-foot-wide New Bedford scallop dredges.
There are 9 federal permits total. Of those 9, Nichols says 7 are owned by a cooperative called Alaska Weather Vane Seafoods. The other 2 are owned on the East Coast and are not fished. Last year, Nichols says the two boats in Kodiak harvested more than 317,000 pounds of shucked scallops. That's just about 60,000 pounds off of the total limit for that year. And for this fishery, that's a big deal. Before the co-op was founded in the year 2000, fishermen struggled to avoid hitting Tanner crab bycatch limits, and oftentimes the fishery closed early. But by forming a co-op instead of competing for scallops, permit holders reduced crab bycatch, allowing the fishery to stay open for longer. Nichols says parts of the fishery have closed to bycatch only twice in the past 10 years. The fishery opened July 1st, and according to Fish and Game, the scallop season usually ends before October. This next story comes from our colleagues at KTOO Radio in Juneau. Pacific gray whales are washing ashore in high numbers this year, including some in Alaska. Their deaths are part of an overall population decline linked to climate change. As KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, some whale advocates want to relist the species under the Endangered Species Act.
So far this year, 145 Pacific gray whales have been found dead on beaches, including 13 in Alaska, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. But not all dead whales end up on beaches, says Rick Steiner, a retired University of Alaska marine conservation professor in Anchorage who advocates on behalf of the whales.
There's a high mortality rate, and of course the ones that wash ashore are only maybe 10% of the whales that are dying.
Last year, NOAA scientists estimated the eastern North Pacific population of gray whales at around 13,000 animals, down from a high of more than double that a decade ago. Gray whales faced what scientists call an unusual mortality event between 2019 and 2023, marked by low birth rates and nearly 700 gray whale strandings. When scientists investigated their deaths, they found starvation and vessel strikes were common. Studies have tied their starvation to the ways climate change disrupts the Arctic food web. The whales migrate thousands of miles from Baja, California to the Arctic each spring to spend the summer feasting on tiny crustaceans at the bottom of the ocean. When Arctic sea ice melts in the spring, algae that thrives on the ice suddenly drops to the seafloor. That feeds the crustaceans, which feed the whales. And as Arctic sea ice shrinks, so does the feast. A spokesperson for NOAA Fisheries said the agency would only consider declaring another unusual mortality event if there were new reasons why so many whales have turned up dead. At this point, starvation still appears to be the cause. In recent years, coastal waters near Kodiak and Sitka have been seeing more gray whales than they used to, hundreds instead of dozens. Scientists suspect they're looking for new sources of food. Steiner, the retired UA professor, says there's some evidence gray whales can shift their diet.
Switching from the benthic little bugs, the amphipods that live in the seabed sediment, to small fishes like Arctic cod up in the water column.
But he says people can do more to help them.
And the way to do that is to relist them on the Endangered Species Act, provide the management tools that NOAA needs in order to give these guys the best chance of making it through this climate bottleneck.
The species was removed from the list in 1994. Last August, Steiner petitioned NOAA to relist the gray whale, which would offer the species more legal protections and recovery efforts. Typically, NOAA takes 90 days after a petition is filed to decide whether to pursue listing the species or not. But it's been almost a year. Steiner says if NOAA doesn't propose relisting the species next month, the issue will end up in court. A spokesperson for NOAA Fisheries said in an email that NOAA is still evaluating the petition and does not have a timeline on its decision. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
A lack of food resources in Alaska this summer means that bear conflicts might be more likely. And a new study suggests that having a dog could more than double that chance. As KMXT's Catherine Irving reports, study authors say there are precautions people can take to protect themselves and their dogs.
Tom Smith is the study's lead author and a research wildlife biologist at Brigham Young University in Utah. He spent more than 30 years studying bears, and several of those years in Kodiak.
It's bear country, I mean, right out the back door.
Smith remembers the moment he first decided to do this study. It was fall 2023. A couple and their dog, experienced backcountry campers, had been fatally mauled by a bear inside their tent in Canada's Banff National Park. Press and park staff both came to him for advice.
The takeaway was they did everything right, and yet they got fatally mauled. But as a bear biologist, I said, no, that's not the message. And I said, I would never take a dog in bear country, period.
Smith explains that dogs and bears are natural enemies. Bears evolved from the ancestors of wolves around 50 million years ago, but there are still a lot of similarities between the two. Wolves and bears compete for food and territory and have been known to kill each other's young.
There's not been a lot of love lost between those two species, so now when you take a mutated wolf, which we call a domestic dog, and put it on a rope, what do you expect?
Older research had suggested that dogs could be helpful in bear country because they alert owners to the presence of bears and protect their owners in the event of an attack. But other research and anecdotal evidence from wildlife managers suggested that bear conflicts were more likely when a dog was present. Smith wanted to see if this was true.
If you go with conventional wisdom, it usually is pretty good, but there's some out there stuff in science. You have to really go after the data.
He and another of these studies' authors have spent decades sorting through news stories and reports from thousands of black, brown, and polar bear encounters across the United States and Canada. Smith found that in more than 300 conflicts, people with dogs were more than twice as likely to have a negative encounter, and that dogs initiated the conflict with the bear more than half the time. Off-leash dogs were 6 times more likely to cause problems than leash dogs. Dogs also alerted their owners to the presence of a bear less than 10% of the time.
That's kind of what we've been telling people for years around here with bears.
That's Larry Van Dale, a retired wildlife biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and current executive director at the Kodiak Brown Bear Trust. Van Dale says that for the most part, coastal brown bears in Kodiak and other parts of Alaska are less likely to be aggressive towards people and pets than their grizzly bear cousins in the lower 48. He says this is partly because the bears have more abundant food sources here.
Grizzly bears have to work a lot harder for their food than brown bears do. Brown bears have big berry patches. They have places to graze the grass. They have a lot of salmon coming in and so forth.
That doesn't mean that there haven't been bear incidents. A woman and her dog fended off a black bear in Cooper Landing just last month. In fact, Van Dale says it's a good idea to be on higher alert around bears this year. The unusually long and cold winter gave berry bushes in Kodiak and the rest of Alaska a late start, so Van Dale says there will be a smaller crop this year. And local salmon runs haven't been very strong so far.
If they're kept out of the dump and don't have the berry patches, and if we don't have a good salmon run in the buskin or a pillar or whatever, they could become a little bit more grouchy, and this whole idea of dogs could be a much more important aspect to think about than in normal years.
Fern Bendio is a research assistant at Brigham Young University and a co-author on the study. She says not taking your dog into bear country is the best way to avoid problems. But if that isn't an option, like in Kodiak, then you can lower your chances of an attack by keeping your dog on a leash.
There's a really specific sequence of events where, like, the dog would be off leash. It's running ahead on the trail. I'm sure you can picture this. And then it runs into a bear and it gets scared. And what does your dog do when it gets scared? It runs right back to the owner, to its safety person.
Bendio also suggests that people have bear spray on hand anytime they go hiking, and even when they let their dog out into the yard. Lead author Smith says that their study is by no means the full story. He'd love to do a survey that includes responses from people who had peaceful encounters with bears, too. But he hopes studies like his will help keep people safe in bear country. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving.
Property tax bills are being sent out by the Kodiak Island Borough on behalf of the city and borough after both municipalities set tax rates for the new fiscal year that started this month. KMXT has more on what Kodiak property owners can expect to pay this year. Property owners in the Kodiak Island Borough will be paying less in property taxes this year after the Borough Assembly decreased the mill rate last month. Borough Assembly member Bo Whiteside proposed that this year's mill rate should be about 2% less than last year's.
This mill rate represents balanced budget, thinking about just basic inflationary increases. It allows for that from fiscal year to fiscal year. So I think this is a reasonable proposal, and it also provides some relief to our community with the mill rate.
Some assembly members, like Dave Johnson and Jeffrey Woods, wanted to at least keep the same mill rate as last year, but most of the members voted in favor of a slightly lowered rate for the entire borough. The new mill rate of 8.75 mills means a property owner with an assessed value of $300,000 would owe $2,625 in property taxes. As for property owners in the city, the mill rate was again set at 2 mills this year. It's been the same since 1985. That means the total property tax rate is 10.75 mills, or $10.75 for every $1,000 of a property's assessed value in the city. Tax statements from the borough started going out to property owners via mail as of the beginning of this month. And for transparency, Borough Mayor Jared Griffin is also the general manager at KMXT. Per KMXT's policy, he does not have any editorial influence over news stories and does not review them before they air. And our final story for this week, 2 years after the last ballot proposition failed, Kodiak City voters will once again decide if the city manager will be required to live within city limits or not. That's after the city council agreed to move forward with a ballot proposition to change the manager's residency requirements last month. KMXT has more. During the council's last regular meeting, all 6 council members voted in support of a potential change to the city manager's residency requirements. The city manager has been required to live within city limits since 1965, when the Kodiak City Charter was first adopted. But the council argues that should be extended to include anywhere within 5 road miles of the city. Councilmember Nick Mangini says changing the residency requirements will allow the city to focus on hiring a local city manager.
I think this really just shows our desire to hire locally and hopefully fill this position from a more local position, somebody that understands and knows Kodiak, and hopefully the general public sees it that way too.
Extending the residency requirements to 5 road miles, which does not include Bell's Flats, would benefit at least one city manager candidate. Interim city manager and Kodiak Police Chief Tim Putney is one of more than 20 applicants being considered for the permanent city manager job. Putney told KMXT he does not live within city limits, but if the residency requirement is extended to 5 road miles from city limits, then he would be eligible. The decision is ultimately in the hands of the more than 4,000 registered city voters in Kodiak. Last time, the decision went up for vote in October of 2024. That year, the council paid a lobbyist $25,000 to create a public information campaign arguing that the residency requirement change to within 12 road miles of city limits was needed. But nearly 60% of the roughly 650 participating city voters shot the proposition down. Resident Dan Rohr told the council that he'd rather see the city manager be required to live somewhere that's connected to city utilities instead of a road mile limitation.
I'm personally nervous about the idea of having a city manager that doesn't have to live with the amenities that our city provides. And so I want to see them live on the public water and sewer. I think that engages them at a different level for us as a community.
The council considered an alternative that would have allowed the city manager to live within service area number one of the Kodiak Island borough instead of an extension based on road miles, but they did not draft a resolution based on where city water and sewer services are provided. Councilmember Annika Wood says she was even skeptical of the proposed residency requirement change.
Thankfully, it's not just up to me. It's up to the community, and I hope the community sees that this council has gone back to the drawing board and we put our heads together. We worked with the city attorney to try to figure out a different solution. And this process has not been for a lack of trying.
The city manager residency proposition will be included on the ballot for city voters during the October 6th municipal election. And for transparency, KMXT employee Terry Haynes is also the Kodiak City Mayor, who presides over the city council. As KMXT's morning host, Haynes makes editorial decisions about what airs in local newscasts, but he did not edit or review this story before it was published. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm Davis Hovey. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in.